Hey, everybody, welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast spoiler minisode. That's right, folks. We're here to talk Blue Beetle with all the juicy details. That sounds kind of gross in reference to a bug. But I'm John Burke, and with me from across the pond is Matt Hudson from whatiwatch.co.uk. Matt, you ready to spoil Blue Beetle?
I'm Blue Dabba Dee Dabba Die, and I'm ready for the juicy beetle. I don't know where we're going with this, but yes, I'm ready to spoil it.
So folks, you've been warned. We are going to talk about all, or any, I guess is more accurate. We don't cover all of it. This is not an all extensive spoiler podcast, but we're going to talk freely about the film, gripe about the things that we didn't like, and maybe gush over the things that we did, without any regard to spoiler warning. So please be known right now that if you continue to listen, you will hear things you may not want to if you've yet to see DC's Blue Beetle. And based on box office, there's a good chance you've yet to see it. So, here we go. Let's get into it. The third act, I guess, is what we got to talk about, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, because when we finally get to the end of the film, go on,
Matt. I gotta interrupt, I think we start with talking about the slighted, the underutilized Harvey Guillen. Yes. I don't believe you've watched the What We Do in the Shadows TV series, correct?
I have not, but I'm fully aware of Harvey Guillen.
Yeah, he is tremendous. Now, most people will know him, if you haven't seen that TV series, from a voice he did in last year's Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, because that movie did really well. And he is the new character, the little scrappy dog that is teaming up with Puss in Boots and the Selma Hayek's character's name. Kittens? Something like
that. Paws? Something like that?
Something like that. He is tremendous in that, but he is so great in What We Do in the Shadows. And I was so hyped when I saw he was on the cast list for this movie. I'm like, awesome. And then I'm seeing the trailer. I'm like, where is he? He's not the Blue Beetle. He doesn't appear to be in the family of the Blue Beetle. Where is he? And then the movie starts and he's immediate. There he is. And they call him Sanchez and he goes, that's not my name. And that's a recurring bit.
It is.
And he does get a hero moment, but his character is so superfluous and so, for like such a good actor to get just like sidelined, I think speaks volume to the script problem of this movie, that you have too much, that you felt the need to write in this character who's going to get a redemption arc, even though he's never really a villain. He works for the villain. Yeah. But he does get like the redemption arc where he's heroic and he saves Jaime. And I love that moment, but it's so unearned. It doesn't it should have probably been the person, I forget the girl's name who gives him the scarab, but she should get the redemption arc because she's one who doomed him, you know, Jennifer, which she does get a redemption, but her redemption's much more, you know, love story centered, right? But everything with him, I think, is emblematic of the problems with this movie. Is there's too many things going on. You want us to care in that moment that he's making the sacrifice, but it's like you've made him the butt of a joke three times before he makes the sacrifice. Why is that like a big moment? Like, good again, and he plays it well. I think he sells it as if he's been in the movie the whole time. But it's like, if I didn't know who you were, you would just be some guy. I know that you're a great actor. And I'm so disappointed this is how they chose to use you. But still, you made your moment. You made it work. But yeah, that to me, man, whew, what a slight.
Yeah, Perito from Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, was his character's name. And yeah, spot on. He is not Harvey Guillen, but that character does pretty much encapsulate this film. For me, a lot of it just felt unearned. Where the especially when we get into that third act, I think the film for me shines more when we lean into the Latino aspect of it with the family life, and it takes a step back. And I'm not going to say it's a family drama because it isn't, but we get to see a little bit more of what I assume is a fairly authentic take on Latino life. I think we get that. We have different characters. I know we've said. Some of them, George Lopez, for example, is his characterization anyway, is OTT and it's very trite. But I like those moments, seeing the family together, whilst at the same time never really bonding with any of them or kind of feeling that I knew them all that well. It felt a little kind of surface level, an awful lot like a lot of the messages, like I mentioned, on the non-spoiler. I think Zolo Maraduena is very, we mentioned before, I'll just say it again, he's charismatic and charming as Jaime Reyes. I do think he brings an awful lot to the table. I think he's let down, though, by the screenplay, the script he's been given and the dialogue he's been given to read, which is a shame. But yeah, getting into that third act, I didn't feel any emotional resonance. I didn't feel sadness. I didn't feel any real tension because nothing really felt earned. Nothing was really built up to, and I wasn't really bothered at all by the villains. I know, I'm sure we'll mention I can't remember the Carapax, I think it was, yeah, Carapax, his motivations for being a villain, or play motivations, his forced motivations, but I wasn't really overly bothered. I knew Blue Beetle wasn't going to die, as is the case with most of these, so it's kind of a case of how are they going to get out of it. And then, like you say, we get this unearned redemption for Harvey Guillen's character, for quote-unquote Sanchez, and then Jenny called Bruna Marquezine, kind of the man saves the day, and he swoops in and he kisses her and everything's great. So it's very much a throwback in that kind of sense. And this film does feel like it's 15 years too late, or at least 10 years too late. But yeah, the third act, I didn't feel anything during that other than the second act dragged on so much. I kind of do want this film to end now because I've seen it all before. And that's the biggest problem for me, JB, like I mentioned, is nothing stood out to me in a film that should have stood out or had something unique. There was nothing here which really made me think, yeah, that is the standout moment of this film. If the film bombs, at least it's got this to fall back on, because I don't think it has. It's just another superhero film that is going to be swept up in the juggernaut that is the genre. And that's the most saddening part for me, is that it had every chance to succeed. Now, the ending didn't work for me, JB, despite the attempts at this big epic spectacle. When you're watching it, the conclusion, were you on the edge of your seat? Did you get more out of it than I did based on the, you know, the 2 hours that came before?
No, not at all. They set up the ending, I think, way too early. And the part that really upset me about the ending is the big hero moment is supposed to be like him and the, I forget the name of the scarab's like voice. Call it something.
Jenny Q, Kaji Dao.
Yeah, like they're like, oh, they've bonded 100%. It's like, were they not already? Like, was there ever a moment where we were supposed to like be like, will they or won't they? Like, that's not the dynamic. That's the dynamic in Venom.
Yes.
Right? Like, will they find a way to work together? Can they be one? They mention it like briefly here, but really it's not like, you don't see them working at it, because he doesn't get to be Blue Beetle very much in this movie. Like,
no, the there's suit parts where he's the hero.
Yeah. They start working together, but it just feels like they start working together. There's no real like relationship build other than we're just told that they start to get each other. Like, nah. It seems like that didn't need to be a plot point if you're not actually going to do anything with it, or make it like a C story or a D story. And for it to be the, can he do it, because they've merged at the end of the story. And then like the voice becomes real, like empathetic to him. Like, don't, you're not a killer. It's like,
this set blows. And, yeah, and like, the hero moment isn't his. The hero moment belongs to Carapax, or the OMAC, OMAC, who actually does the damage.
Yeah.
At the end of the film.
Yeah. And like, he has the arc, right? Like, and they kind of earn it. Like, they allude to it early, and then we get the flashback where like the scarab's like, I actually know what's in his brain now. It's like, that's convenient.
Didn't want to tell you that before, though.
Yeah. Like, what? Oh, good exposition movie. So yeah, it really fumbles the end. I think it all the things, like the family coming together to save him should have been the end, right? Because that's the dynamic that the film is the most interested in, is like, he felt like he abandoned his family, and when he needs them the most, they don't abandon him, you know, like, because that's, he comes back and they cram a lot of, like, it's used for humor, like, because the sister tells it, and she just, like, blurts out, like, we lost the house, we did this, and, like, Jaime feels terrible, and you feel for him, but I don't know, like, that felt even extra, like, it didn't feel genuine or sincere. There's a little bit of commentary
as well at the beginning.
Yeah. There's a little commentary about, like, we tell kids to go to college and you'll have a great career, and then he can't find a job. I get that. You know, that's a real problem. And they, of course, go into massive debt in order to get that degree. And then that doesn't, they don't, it gets no money. Hey, I'm living that. I feel it. But at the end, it just doesn't feel like they knew why the movie. You know, it's like, we made a movie. It's like, cool, what's it about? Oh, superheroes? It's like, oh, okay, what do? Well, they fight supervillains. Okay. World Takeover? They're like, well, kind of. It's a slow burn World Takeover. Like, right now, it's like the prototype. Later, she might take over the world, but only if the prototype works. It's like, okay, there's a lot going on. Family? Like, yeah, there's family. Okay, cool. So the family dynamics? No. It takes a back burn. The uncle will be in it a lot. He'll be yelling so much. Like, so much yelling. It feels messy. And you know, sometimes messy is good because some things feel too formulaic, right? But this is like formulaic, sloppily done. And that's the biggest problem with the movie. Again, I think there's a lot of heart. I think there's a lot of charm. And I think there is some good humor. And again, I think the overall vibe is so positive that it is slightly undeniable. I don't think you can hate this movie, but you can see all of its flaws. And it needed to be a little bit more polished, unfortunately, for it to really like shine. That was an accidental metaphor.
That was a huge, deliberate metaphor, we're going to say. In
yes,
fact.
Yes.
Yeah, the trailer's kind of set this up to be this kind of eclectic, colourful, adventurous, fun romp. And to its credit, the film is that for some of its time. But I don't think it can decide what it wants to be. There is kind of thematic stuff going on here, which for me is very surface level. There is the attempt at, you know, really showing us, you know, what it is to be Latino. What do you know? Let's be proud of this. We get that. We also get the cliche superhero stuff because it is the genre. Same with any genre, you're going to get the conventions. You're going to get the tick box stuff that you expect. It tries to be funny and it tries to be epic and all these aspects and everything. And it's kind of like the jack of all, master of none in a way that it's fine at doing those things. You know. Even if it's surface level on some, you know, the elements are there. It's, you know, sometimes some of these aspects work, sometimes they're not as strong, but it doesn't master any of them. It doesn't really excel at any of these points. It doesn't, I mean, it looks fine, but I don't think it looks great. The action is good, but I don't think the action is great. The performances are good. I don't think they're great. You know, I can go on and on and on here. And that's what I feel about Blue Beetle. It's, you know, I think it's good, but even that, without meaning to sound hyper negative, I'm stretching myself to say that. I will happily say this isn't a bad film. I think for me, it's more just kind of, it's just there. And like I've said, ad nauseum now, I will forget about this film in a few days' time. And I've seen films in this genre and in similar genres that I don't forget. You know, I remember that they linger on and on. Even if they're not the best films, there's something there that sticks. And there isn't anything here that sticks other than kind of tedium, where it's everything I've seen before. Okay, we're setting up potentially the DCU. Got to try and call it the right thing now, even though it wasn't originally meant to be that. Let's not kid ourselves, but now it is. So we've got that to play into it. And obviously the baggage that Warner Brothers and the genre is having at the minute. There was a lot going against this film, so kind of unfairly, it almost had unfair expectations in my eyes to be a saviour. I don't think it's ever going to be incredible, but I did hope for more, JB, just from the retro marketing they'd gone for. And the film does feel like I mentioned, it's about a decade too late for me. This would have slapped a few years back, but yeah, there's you know, even now I'm looking at, you know, remembering the film and going in my head and thinking there's got to be something here which, you know, as a spoiler, I want to talk about. I mean, Alberto, Homer's father, who is played by Damien Alcazar, partway through the film, the kind of emotional crux of the film is he has a cardiac arrest, he has a heart attack, and he dies. You know, he dies in the arms of whatever the girl is called in the film. I cannot remember who his... I can't remember this. Milagro Reyes, Jaime's younger sister, Belisa Escobedo. she's there and he dies with her, and of course at the same time Blue Beetle's getting it handed to him, and that was meant to be this big moment, but it just didn't hit for me. It was also kind of, for me, it was played out slightly melodramatically as well, which took away some of that tension. But I'm thinking, like, what is it about this film? It's got to be something. It starts quickly. We find out that the family are they're in trouble. They're in financial difficulty. They're going to be evicted. Jaime comes home, blames himself for some reason. Okay, fine. So we've got that now. We're immediately being thrown into this drama, and then before we know it, he steps in to try and help Victoria and at her workplace against the evil Susan Sarandon, and he gets fired, and then suddenly she's like, hey, have my number, I'll get you a job tomorrow. What? And then he goes to the job and he gets a scarab in a burger box, and it's click, click, click. We're getting to where we need to be quickly. Problem with that is that middle section for me suffers badly, I think, where they could have cut a lot of that out and maybe set up a little bit more of the relationship between Jennifer and Jaime. So when we got to giving him the scarab, because that's 15 minutes in, maybe make that a little bit later so we build up to it. We cut out some of the fat in the middle, building up to maybe what could have been a slightly more satisfying ending for me. But I guess, how do you think this is going to be received by the end of its run? Because for me, I think it's pretty forgettable. But do you think it's going to be a cult following here? Do you think it's got legs or anything?
I don't know. I don't... It's possible, because it is unique in its own way, and there's a lot of style here, right? Like we've mentioned, the 80s look and
yeah,
flair.
It's not a bad film.
You can't deny that, and a lot of that works. And Blue Beetle is cool, I think, as a character. I think his powers are really cool. They're obviously in the spoilers. We're here. You stayed for the post-credit?
I did, yes. Of course, we can talk about that, yeah.
They're setting up, obviously, like the original Blue Beetle, Ted Kord, still being alive. He does not have the scarab. I actually didn't know much about him. I knew of Blue Beetle. I didn't know a lot of the lore. There's a lot of fan theories already spinning out of this because of Booster Gold and Blue Beetle, Ted Kord's Blue Beetle having connections. So people think, is that Booster Gold that we hear? And he's a time traveler, so that also allows for, again, some more reset stuff the DC could do. I don't know that it'll have that following. Again, there's a lot here that people could easily latch onto. I think if you're a young kid, maybe it's enough to win you over. And again, it's there are some dirty jokes in this. There's a boner joke. And
that's
kind of
it.
Yeah, but like he clearly covers up his area and like stands up awkwardly after almost kissing Jenny.
Yes, and being interrupted by the family member cliche. Yeah.
And it's like, so I was about to say this movie isn't too rough for kids, but it's like, no, it actually it's kind of rough at times. Some brutal, like it's comic book violence, but it's like some brutal stuff happens. People get like smashed and crashed, and I don't know.
Maybe a heart attack in the middle of the film.
Yeah. And then like there is that, I do think some of those, I think the performances by the dad and the mom, by the way, are really strong given, they're giving like a real dramatic performance in this comic book movie. That I think their performance is so good. It works even despite the script, like the scene where like he talks to the dad's spirit or whatever. I don't know if that's supposed to actually be his spirit. Hard to tell if it's supposed to be literal or just like in his head.
I couldn't work it out. I thought it was in his head, but I'm not sure.
I don't know, right? I'm not going one way or the other, but I thought that scene shouldn't work, but because I like the performance from the dad enough that I'm like, I buy it. I'm emotionally moved because the performance is good. And Zolo sells the emotion too, but it's a little cheesy.
Yeah, I think the film in itself, I don't know if it's deliberately, but there is a cheese to this film which is apparent. And look, my last point on the film is what we labored this in the non-spoiler, but if this is going to be more of the tone of what to expect from the Gunn Safran DCU, then you know I'm in, because I think that there is a place for your more mature, darker takes, for want of a better term. I hate that term, darker, but and also a light-hearted, fun adventure that, you know, families can see as well. The two can coexist in the same universe. And you look at something like Swamp Thing, the Mangold film. I expect that to be a I'm going to say a darker film than this. But I don't want the DCU, if I could be so bold, I don't want, but to be just one or the other. I'd love to see directors coming in and putting their stamp on things, similar to Marvel. Do this, and this, and then, you know, give us your idea what you want to do because we've hired you for a reason. I'd love to see more of that, and hopefully we can get this. And I'm not entirely up on Angel Manuel Soto's work. He's a Puerto Rican director. I don't know an awful lot of what he's done. I do believe this is his first major project in terms of a huge big studio. But apparently he formed a punk rock group way back when, which would kind of actually probably play into the aesthetic a bit of this film. But so if we can, you know, if they're going to go down that road of getting other unknown directors and giving them their break, or, you know, auteur or stylistic directors, then I mean, Blue Beetle isn't the strongest start for a new franchise or new universe. But, you know, there's promise to be made from, even for me, kind of an average film.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Anything else you want to add? Because I'm done.
I'm done. I think that was pretty extensive, honestly. There's a lot in the movie, but it also, at the same time, it's like, it's not. It's all exactly what you have seen many other times. So that's our spoiler review of Blue Beetle. We'll be back with our spoiler-free review of Gran Turismo, clearly the best video game movie of all time. No, I don't know. I've heard mixed things. Matt's already seen it. Don't tell me. I'll hear your thoughts next week, but we'll be talking Gran Turismo. I keep wanting to see Gran Torino, too. Sorry, Clint Eastwood. It's not your time to shine. You can follow us on social media in the meantime at Instagram or Threads, a Bloody Awesome Movie Pod. Where are we on Twitter?
We are at BAMP_podcast, BAMP_podcast.
And on Facebook, Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast, and you'll find us there. You can follow me at BurkeReviews.com and at BurkeReviews on all the social media platforms. Matt, where can they find you?
You can find me whatiwatchtonight.co.uk and just search What I Watch Tonight across all of the socials, including Letterboxd.
And if you like what we're doing here at the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast, we ask that you give us that 5-star rating on whatever podcast catcher you use to listen, because it helps other people find the show.
Yes.
With that, we encourage you to keep watching movies
and stay bloody awesome. Blood, 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 bloody, 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 blood, blood, bloody.